Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 53. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. As my regular listeners may know, I'm also the executive director of the Global Workspace Association, and we are approaching the early bird deadline for our annual conference in September. All the details are at conference.globalworkspace.org, and of course, we'll include the link in the show notes. But if you run a shared workspace or are thinking about starting one, you're an investor, a corporate user of shared workspace, a commercial real estate professional, or a service provider in the industry, you should not miss the Global Workspace Association's annual conference. It is the place to be a part of the conversation around the future of flexible office. The first early bird ticket deadline is June 15th, which is unbelievably right around the corner, so make sure you get your tickets before the price goes up. So today we're going to jump into the third and final episode of our short series on starting your search to find a location for your shared workspace. If you are starting your search and you missed episode number 51 on finding a great broker to help you with your search, or number 52, the 10 things to look for in your coworking space search, go back and listen. But assuming you're all caught up and you followed along with episodes 51 and 52, you have a good broker with coworking experience, you've brushed up on your commercial real estate lingo, and you have your checklist, which is downloadable. If you listen to the episode, you'll get the link of top 10 things to look for in your coworking space during your search. Then if you've started looking at space, it's now time to understand how the lease process works. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And the title of this episode is Surviving the Lease Negotiation Process, because it can be a long and arduous journey. A friend of mine just signed a space here in the Bay Area, and it took him exactly 1 year from when he started looking for space to when he signed it. He had a lot of roadblocks and a lot of things come up throughout the process, and he finally made it through. But please beware, this can take a long time and be quite painful and have lots of unexpected surprises. You would think in the year 2017 that this would not be that hard. And let me tell you, once you start this process, you'll understand why people want to join either flexible office options, no matter what those look like, because signing a commercial lease is challenging. Okay. So first, make sure you have a good real estate attorney ready to spring into action once you get into the nitty-gritty of the lease negotiation. As we discussed in episode number 51, you don't want to do this process, especially if it's your first time, without a broker. And now I'm telling you that if this is your first space, you really don't want to do this without a real estate attorney. Once you've done this a few times, you may feel comfortable reviewing leases without an attorney. But even then, you want other people in the space, other operators, advisors, somebody with a lot of knowledge in the space to be reviewing those leases so that you don't miss anything. And particularly if it's your first time and you are new and you don't have these networks of other operators who will look at your lease for you, hire an attorney. You do have to pay for this attorney out of pocket. You don't pay a broker, but you absolutely have to pay an attorney. They will seem expensive, but I promise you that the downside risk to not using one can be much, much greater than what you will fork over after you sign that lease. So budget for it and do it. So get a strong referral from someone in your network for a good real estate attorney. And if at all possible, try to get someone that has some experience in flexible office so that they understand some of the unique needs around your model and can also help you a little bit from a business perspective on what to look for. Because leases, are, you know, they're technical, they're about liability, they're also making sure you have the right terms, which you should be doing. You should have the right, you know, business advisors. Your broker can help with this a little bit, especially if you have a really good one, which we talked about in episode number 51. But your real estate attorney should be just another person who can watch out for things that are going to challenge your business model. So if you have someone who understands that you are not signing a traditional corporate office lease, that you have a different use and a different model for the space that could be really helpful. Okay, so a little bit about how the lease process works. Once you find a space that requires the least number of trade-offs that you can handle in your particular market, the next step that you're going to do, so once you're happy with a space and you feel like, okay, this is the one we're going to go after, your broker will work with you to execute a letter of intent, or LOI is the acronym. It can be called other, it can have other names like a proposal, but letter of intent is pretty common. So here's a quick overview of that letter of intent, and you can get more details at nolo.com, N-O-L-O.com, and we'll include the link in the show notes and the blog post related to this. So a letter of intent may be written by the landlord or the landlord's lawyer, or by you or your lawyer. In my experience, it's written by the lessee's broker. The letter summarizes key issues that you've already discussed, such as the issues mentioned above, and may mention other aspects of the lease negotiations, such as a timeline for improvement work and moving in. The letter can be legally binding or non-binding, depending on how it's written and how you and the landlord treat it. In short, the letter of intent may be a mini lease or a simple roadmap for future negotiations. So the letter of intent may include the following list of items that I've kind of put together based on my experience and what I've seen. So again, it's not the actual lease, but it's to get you to a point where you feel like you can get into the very detailed process of going through the lease negotiations. So once you get into the technical lease, which can be tens of pages long, you want the basic terms to have been worked out so that what you have left are like more technical details, and that you're not going to get, you know, 10 months into the process and decide you didn't actually ever agree on the rental rate and have to start over. So you want kind of the basic underlying terms of the agreement to be decided up front, and that's the purpose of the LOI. That doesn't mean that these things can't change, but you're basically negotiating in good faith after this based on these terms. So here are the items that an LOI would generally include. The rent rate, rent increases, and the timeline for those increases. The lease period, so when does the lease start and when does it end. The lease type, is it full service, triple net. Free rent period, so, you know, over when does, will you get free rent, when does it start and when does it end. And tenant improvement dollars, so you may have some combination of free rent and the landlord may pay for some of the build out based on kind of the dynamics of the local market. So the LOI will specify what this looks like. Usually the TI dollars come in dollar amounts per square foot. So $10 per square foot as an example. The LOI may include number of parking spots included in your lease, and markets often have a required number per thousand square feet. Real estate taxes and operating expenses that you will be expected to pay, access to the building and security setup, signage. So what signage do you get? What are you allowed to put up? The security deposit, and this is important because this can be a deal breaker in some cases. And then use of the space. So the LOI will outline what you're going to use the space for to show that everybody understands what the plan is. So in order to prepare the letter of intent, the broker will look for comparable spaces in the market to use to propose a lease rate. So the broker will have some sense from your broker will have some sense from the landlord's broker what type of rent range the landlord is looking for. And then he will go and use his resources to get comparables, good comparables, similar types of buildings, maybe age of building, maybe condition of building in the local market to suggest a rent rate that makes sense based on all those things. Also, the other thing the landlord will do is kind of understand market rate for TI contributions. So those will be kind of a couple of big things that need to be researched. The other pieces, you know, you can certainly suggest, like signage, for example, but the other pieces will be kind of more standard, and the landlord will have to fill that out as his expectation. So once the initial proposal has been submitted, the landlord will respond. It can obviously go the other way. If the landlord creates the LOI, then you would respond. So once the other side responds, you're negotiating in good faith, which means that you, the lessee, should not be negotiating for other space with another landlord. And in turn, the landlord should not be negotiating with another lessee about the same space. So nobody's competing. You're sort of exclusively dating at this point, but you're not married. That's the purpose of the LOI, to make sure you sort of get along well enough to get married and agree on all of these terms. So once these general terms in the LOI have been agreed to, and at this point, it's entirely possible the whole thing could fall apart. Maybe you just simply don't agree. The landlord's not giving any TI, and you absolutely need TI to do what you need to do in the space, or there's no free rent period, or you just don't agree on the lease rate, or when it starts, or the term of the lease. Maybe you really want 10 years, and the landlord will only do 5. So there are a number of reasons why the deal may just die here, which is good because you want to know sooner rather than later. Because as we are about to go through, the lease process can be really long, and you want to know that you're investing in something that looks likely to happen if you dig into the lease process. So once you agree to the general terms in an LOI and you will both sign the LOI, then the lease process begins. And at this point, a sophisticated landlord will likely have a standard template that they prefer to use and will prepare it and send it to the lessee. This, however, may not be the case. So often there may be landlords that own some real estate, but not enough to get really serious about processes, and may have a lease template that you know they use, or they may change it based on which real estate attorney they're working with or which tenant it is or whatever. So the real estate industry is just shockingly unstandardized, and you will find that the time and money spent on lease negotiations and real estate attorneys is completely mind-blowing and will make you want to rip your hair out, but you will get through it. So you may have to take up meditating to deal with your stress levels over this process, but there is an upside. Again, you will say, oh my God, I see why people join co-working spaces. Who in their right mind would ever sign a commercial lease? And you will then find the energy to get through this process. So the actual lease, so the LOI may be a page or two, pretty manageable, but the lease will be a substantial document, could be tens of pages, and negotiations may literally take months, which again makes no sense for a number of reasons. It doesn't make any economic sense. And you think about it, you think, why? How can this process possibly take so long when commercial leases get signed all the time? Brokers want to get paid. They would like it to go faster. The landlords like having space, don't like having space sitting empty with no rental income. They want it to go faster. One explanation is that the real estate attorneys are at fault because they're the ones that are billing hourly and want the process to take a long time. And you may feel this once you get started down the path with a real estate attorney. They may also make you crazy because attorneys are there to mitigate risk, and they don't care how long the process takes. As a matter of fact, they are incented to have it take a really long time. So, but I generally don't think the real estate attorneys are driving this. There seems to be a lot of minor delays that add up to the major delays. And once you get into the process, you'll see the things that can happen. These are some from some of my experiences. So it takes longer than you think to get general contractors in to give you bids so that you can negotiate on TI. The landlord may be working on multiple leases, and maybe there's a bigger space that he's working on. And so he does that one first, and he takes weeks to turn around with your review. Maybe your real estate attorney goes on vacation, and then the broker goes on vacation. There's something in the lease that you don't like, and you take a week to decide how to respond to it. And then your real estate attorney goes on vacation. Someone else gets really interested in the space, and the landlord starts to play hardball on some of the terms that you thought you were aligned on. Again, they're not supposed to change terms that you agreed on in the LOI, but, you know, things happen. The landlord gets a tax notice and increases the CAM. The landlord's broker goes on vacation. Someone uncovers a new regulation that has to be addressed with any new construction. Totally changes the cost of the build-out. You have to start over on some of the negotiations. Someone has a death in the family. And it's 9 months later, and somehow you're still working on the same lease. So once you get through these delays, at some point there will be a financial review of the lessee. So be prepared for this process. The landlord needs to review your ability to sign the lease and cover the lease if your business does not succeed immediately. So the signing of the lease will be dependent on the landlord reviewing a financial application, and even less sophisticated landlords will still have a financial app that they want you to fill out. And you have to fill it out, and it has all of your personal information about all the assets that you have anywhere in the world, your household, so you and your spouse if you're married. The landlord will have a very subjective requirement for a level of assets that he needs to see on your personal balance sheet to be comfortable with you taking on this liability. Which brings us to another topic, the personal guarantee. There is some debate over whether or not you can avoid the personal guarantee. In my perception, it is not very easy to avoid. Of course, every landlord would prefer to include one in the lease. The personal guarantee essentially means that if your business entity can't pay the rent, then your personal assets, for example, your home, can be seized to pay the rent. Some people will suggest that landlords will not actually spend the attorney fees to go through with suing you, but some may. And also, there are markets in which this is not as common. I recently had a friend tell me that in general, landlords in Milwaukee, Wisconsin don't require personal guarantees. In Chicago, they do. So you might be in a market where you don't have to sign away your firstborn, or you might. So be prepared for this and know what you're willing to do and not willing to do. And of course, have this discussion with your spouse if you are married. Security deposits. You see, we're talking about all the fun, expensive portions of this search. The landlord will likely require a security deposit that he or she can hold through the length of the lease. The deposit can be equal to, say, 2 months of rent, or it could be much more. The landlord gets to decide, and it could be more in major metro markets like a San Francisco or a New York. And it may be higher for lessees with no prior rental history or business credit. So tech companies, for example, probably pay very high security deposits because they tend to move out unexpectedly and the landlord wants some coverage while they find a new tenant. So this is really the landlord's ability to cover his butt if you go out of business and you move out unexpectedly and stop paying rent. If you have signed a personal guarantee, he can try to go after your personal assets, but this takes time and attorneys and all that good stuff. So the security deposit is the easy short-term way for him to cover his mortgage on the building if you should stop paying rent. So your broker will have to help you with this and help you understand what's common and not common in the marketplace. And this is why you want a good broker that you trust and has experience, because you want, if you don't have to sign one of these, you do not want to. So you want a broker who has the highest level of possibility in avoiding this. But you may not be able to avoid it. I signed one on my first lease. What your broker may be able to help with is to negotiate a burn-off of your security deposit. So maybe you pay it, and then over a certain number of months, as you've paid rent on time and you've shown that your business is stable, you may be able to earn back the deposit. So certainly ask about that and have your broker ask for that, for those terms, if you have to put down especially a large security deposit, because the landlord can do anything with that money. He doesn't have to keep it in any sort of interest-bearing account. And so it's just, you know, it's unusable capital. And especially if you're raising, well, not especially, whether you're self-funding or you're raising capital, you don't want money to sit and not be able to go to work. And that's what happens with security deposits. So here are a few additional notes to consider as you work through the lease process. So think about ahead of time your priorities. So things like, who's going to fund the tenant improvement? Tenant improvement is any construction that you need to do on the space, building walls, building offices, putting in electrical work, anything really except furniture, which you can take with you. You cannot take tenant improvement with you. So, you know, oftentimes the landlord will have a budget for this. or you might pay for it and in exchange get free rent over time, or the landlord may do a combination of tenant improvement dollars and free rent or a reduced rental rate for X number of months. So you just want to think through, like, who's financing this, and are you actually, you know, are you going to pay back the construction costs over time in your lease, and kind of how do you want to manage that, and what free rent period or reduced rent period is really important to you in order to give you time to get your business up to speed and still leave enough starting capital in the bank. Make sure as you go through the lease and you get into the details of CAM, which is common area, and maintenance, which can include real estate increases and that kind of thing. We talked about this in the last episode. Make sure that your business model still works in the later years of the lease when, A, the rental rate has gone up. So you'll get the schedule in the LOI of what your rent increases look like. So that may be something like you start with a rent of X, and then, you know, every year on your lease anniversary date, your rent goes up by 2% or 2.5% or 3% or whatever is kind of common for the market. So, you know, that compounds over time, and, you know, into a 10-year lease, that could be a big number. And you want to make sure that your model is going to work when those increases come through. And I think we mentioned this in the last episode. Make sure you take into account the age of the building and tax increases, what's going on in the neighborhood, is there turnover, is there likely to be a reassessment on the building, and make sure you know what those tax increases, like what the risk of those looks like, and that your model still works if those come through. As we talked about in episode number 51 on things to look for when you do your search for your space, make sure that you ask for the signage that you need to help your members and guests find your entrance. If you did not listen to episode number 51, make sure you go back so that you can get a really good sense of what you should be looking for when you're looking at space, because it's a good checklist and it's things that you may not think about, but signage is critical. Things like building codes. If building codes have changed and you find this out in the lease, and something like the lighting has to be updated, this happened to the friend that I mentioned here in the Bay Area. New codes require LED lighting for any new construction. Make sure you negotiate who will be responsible for that, you or the landlord. Again, no matter what the answer is, the goal is to avoid surprises and make sure that you can fund it. Make sure the lease language allows you to run your business. Make sure your real estate attorney understands your business model and adjusts the language in the subleasing section to make sure that you can license space to your members or your clients, and that any license will not be viewed as a sublease that has to be approved by the landlord. This is really important because, again, in a standard commercial office lease, there would be a sublease section that states probably that a sublease is allowed and that the landlord has to approve it. You do not want your members or clients and the relationship that you have with them to be viewed as a sublease, and for the landlord to at some point say he wants to approve all of the people that come through the space and join your space. So that almost universally will need to be updated for a co-working shared workspace lease. So make sure to take a look at that. I'm sure there are other things, but this kind of gives you an overview of the lease process, how it works, some of the challenges, and how long it can take. So that concludes our short 3-episode series on getting you started on looking for a shared workspace. I hope this has been helpful. If you have any other questions or suggestions on things that I missed and should include, please send me an email at jamie@everythingcoworking.com, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.